All right, welcome back, everyone. Today we're doing a really deep dive on a case that should help you really get a handle on this whole idea of negligence, especially, you know, how courts decide who's actually responsible when things go wrong.
Yeah, negligence can be tricky.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the case we've got, it's Henry V. Houston Lighting and Power Codes from 1990. And it's got a lot going on. It's got this gas leak, and then there's this, well, I don't want to spoil it, but there's this fog machine that shows up, and it just leads to this whole mess of legal questions about who has to pay when a rescuer gets hurt in the middle of all this.
Yeah, what you'll find really interesting is, well, this case, it went from a trial court decision to an appeal, and the appellate court completely reversed what the trial court said.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're going to look at how that happened. Using our case brief, we've got a structure from a podcast, and we've got a legal summary, too, just to kind of guide us as we walk through this whole thing.
Perfect. So let's just jump right in. We're back in 1990. And we've got a crew working for Houston Lighting and Power. We'll just call them HLMP, you know, Keep it simple. And they're putting in a new utility pole. And I think we all know when you're digging around in the ground, sometimes you hit things you weren't expecting.
Right.
And in this case, yeah, they hit a gas line.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, not good. So obviously they need to get someone out there to fix this, right? And that's where Edwin Henry comes in. He's a repairman. Like, that's his job, dealing with these kinds of gas leak emergencies.
Makes sense. I mean, that's a pretty foreseeable problem when you're dealing with utilities. So you send a repair team out. It's standard procedure.
Exactly. So Henry shows up. He's underground working on sealing this gas leak. And then out of nowhere, someone yells, "Fire!" Now, you can imagine down there underground with a gas leak, hearing fire has got to be terrifying.
Right.
But here's the thing. The smoke isn't from the gas leak.
Oh.
It's actually from a mosquito fogger nearby that just happened to be going off at that same time.
Mm-hmm.
Just a huge cloud of smoke.
Wow.
So Henry, thinking there's a fire in this already dangerous situation, understandably panics, tries to get away quickly, and, well, he runs right into a utility pole, and he's hurt, like seriously injured.
Yikes.
Yeah. So now we get to this really important legal question. We've got a real danger, this gas leak that HLMP's contractor caused. We've got a professional who was called in specifically to respond to that danger. And then we've got this totally random event, this fog machine, that creates a whole lot of panic and leads to an injury.
Right.
So who do we hold responsible for Henry's injuries?
Yeah, that's the whole point of this case, right? Figuring out where the responsibility actually lies when you've got all these different factors.
Exactly. So the case goes to court, and the trial judge actually sides with HLMP. They grant them what's called summary judgment, meaning they basically said, we don't even need a full trial for this.
Interesting.
And their reasoning had a lot to do with two main legal ideas. First, they looked at something called the firefighter's rule.
Right, the firefighter's rule.
Can you break that down for us a little bit?
Sure. The firefighter's rule is this legal idea that professional rescuers, so think your firefighters, police officers, people like that, when they get hurt while responding to an emergency that someone else caused, they usually can't sue that person for their injuries.
So, like, if a firefighter gets hurt putting out a fire that I accidentally started, they can't sue me.
Right, basically. The logic is those jobs are inherently dangerous. They're going into situations where there's already a risk, and they're getting paid to take on that risk. So the trial court, in this case, they kind of applied that logic to Henry. Even though he's a utility worker, he was there responding to this gas leak, which was like an emergency situation.
Okay, that makes sense. So that was the first part of their decision. But there was another big argument they used, right?
Yeah, the second argument focused on what we call proximate cause.
Proximate cause.
Proximate cause is this, well, it's this legal link between someone's actions, so the defendant's actions, and the harm that happened to someone else, so the plaintiff's injury.
Right.
So in this case, the trial court, they said that the mosquito fogger, the fact that it went off and caused all that panic, that was an unforeseeable superseding cause. Basically, it was such a random event that it broke the chain of responsibility back to HLNP.
So, like, it was so out there that it basically erased HLNP's responsibility for the whole thing?
Exactly. They were saying HLNP couldn't have possibly seen that coming, and therefore they shouldn't be held liable for what happened to Henry because of it.
Okay, that makes sense in a way. But as we know, legal battles often have more than one round. And in this case, the appellate court had a very different take on things. They actually reversed the trial court's decision. So what were their main arguments for doing that?
Well, the appellate court had several issues with the trial court's reasoning. For starters, they pointed out that the dangerous situation, the gas leak that HLMP's contractor caused, that was still an active problem when Henry got hurt.
Right. It wasn't like the leak was fixed and then something else happened.
Exactly. They said the danger hadn't come to rest. It was still ongoing. And that meant the initial negligence from HLNP was still a very real factor in everything that unfolded.
Okay, so they're saying that the initial mistake wasn't just something in the past. It was still an ongoing problem.
Precisely. It's a really important distinction for understanding their reasoning. And then second, the appellate court looked at that whole foreseeability issue.
Right, because the trial court said that the fogger was unforeseeable.
Exactly. And the appellate court, they clarified that. They said, look, the law doesn't require you to predict the exact specific way someone might get hurt. It's more about whether the general type of harm was foreseeable.
So it's not about predicting the fog machine, but about understanding that things could go wrong in a situation like that.
Right. And to make their point, they quoted a really important legal principle here. They said, the particular accident need not be foreseen, but the injury must be of such a general character as might reasonably have been anticipated.
So basically they're saying HLMP didn't need to know a mosquito fogger was going to go off, but they should have understood that sending someone to fix a gas leak could lead to someone getting hurt.
Right, especially if something unexpected happened during the repair, and that's where that third point comes in.
Okay, what were that?
Well, the appellate court, they looked at that whole causation question, you know, that link between HLMP's actions and Henry's injury, and they suggested that maybe the fogger wasn't a superseding cause at all. Maybe it was what's called a concurring cause. And a concurring cause, it's like an action that happens alongside the original negligent action, and they both contribute to the injury.
So instead of the fogger breaking the chain of responsibility, it kind of joined in with the gas leak to cause the injury.
Exactly. They were saying that the fogger incident, it happened because Henry was already in this dangerous situation that HLMP created.
Okay, so we're starting to see how complex these legal concepts can be, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And this case really highlights those complexities.
Absolutely. So let's dig into this a bit more. We've got this firefighter's rule. Does it really make sense to apply that to someone like Henry, who's a utility worker, and he's there to fix the very problem that HLMP's contractor caused?
That's a great question. I mean, that's where this whole case gets really interesting, and you can see why the trial court went the way they did.
Right. They were applying that idea that if you're paid to deal with dangerous situations, you kind of accept the risks that come with that.
Right. And to them, it seemed logical that HLMP shouldn't necessarily be responsible when the person they call to fix the leak ends up getting hurt doing exactly that.
But the appellate court saw it differently.
Yeah, the appellate court made a very important distinction. They argued that the firefighter's rule, it usually applies when the original negligence has run its course.
Okay.
Like the negligent act is done, finished, over with, and the emergency responders are now dealing with the aftermath. But in Henry's case, the danger, that gas leak, it was still very much active. It wasn't a finished event.
So they were saying it's one thing if the negligence is in the past, but it's a different story if it's still actively causing a dangerous situation.
Precisely. And then there's the whole issue of causation. You know, how far does responsibility actually reach?
Right. You mentioned a really interesting analogy earlier, something about a car crash and banana peels.
Oh, right. So imagine this. Someone causes a car accident, right? And a paramedic rushes to the scene to help. But while they're running towards the injured people, they slip on a banana peel that someone just happened to drop nearby. And they break their ankle.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So the question becomes, is the person who caused the car crash responsible for the paramedic's broken ankle, too? Because it all started with their careless driving.
Right. Because if they hadn't caused the crash, the paramedic wouldn't have been there.
Exactly. But in most cases, the answer would be no. Because the banana peel, that's like a totally new and unexpected event that isn't really connected to the car crash itself. It's what we call a superseding cause, and it breaks the chain of responsibility.
Okay. So it kind of interrupts that link between the original negligence and the injury.
Exactly. Now, in Henry's case, the appellate court was saying that the fog machine wasn't like that banana peel. It happened while the dangerous situation created by HLMP, that gas leak, was still ongoing. The leak hadn't been fixed, the area was still a hazard, and the emergency response was still in progress.
So they saw it more as part of that whole messy situation that was created by the gas leak,
yeah,
rather than a totally separate event.
Exactly. The fogger, even though it was unexpected, it didn't break the chain of responsibility back to HLMP. It was more like a piece added onto an already existing problem.
Okay, so it seems like the appellate court really looked closely at all the details of the situation.
Oh, absolutely. They applied some pretty important legal tests and standards to really figure out what was going on here.
And what were some of the main things they considered?
Well, first, they looked at something called the substantial factor test.
The substantial factor test.
And this test asks, was the defendant's negligence, in this case, HLMP's negligence in causing the gas leak, was that a significant factor in the plaintiff's injury? And they said yes, because the injury happened while Henry was responding to that very leak.
So it wasn't just some minor thing. It was a major part of why he got hurt.
Right. And then the second thing they considered, they looked at the generality of harm.
Generalities of harm.
And this gets back to the idea of foreseeability.
Right.
They asked, was it reasonably foreseeable that someone could get hurt while responding to a dangerous gas leak? And they said, yes. Even something as unusual as a fog machine setting off a panic and leading to an injury, that still falls within the general scope of risks you'd expect in that kind of situation.
So they're saying it's not about predicting the specific bizarre thing that's going to happen. It's about understanding that in dangerous situations, bad things can happen, even if you can't predict exactly how.
Exactly. And then the third factor they looked at was temporal continuity. Had the danger created by HLMP, that active gas leak, had that come to an end by the time Henry was injured?
Right.
And they said, no, it hadn't. It was still an ongoing hazard.
So the timeline really matters here.
Yes, the timeline is key.
Right.
And then finally, they looked at intervention analysis. Was the mosquito fogger a superseding cause, something that totally absolved HLMP of responsibility? Or was it a concurring cause, something that worked alongside the ongoing gas leak? And they said it was more likely a concurring cause. The fogger incident, it was part of that whole dangerous situation that HLMP had created.
Okay, so that was their fourth factor. And you mentioned a precedent case earlier, Union Pump Covey, All Britain. Can you remind us how that case was different from Henry's situation and why the appellate court found that distinction so important?
Sure. In Union Pump, you had a fire at a plant, and the fire was caused by the defendant's negligence. After the fire was put out, a plant employee got hurt while they were cleaning up. And the Texas Supreme Court, they said, look, the defendant's negligence in starting the fire, that wasn't the direct cause of the employee's injury. Because the fire, the immediate danger, that was over. The situation had stabilized. But in Henry's case, the gas leak, that was still a live threat when he got hurt. The emergency wasn't over, it was still happening.
So in Union Pump, the initial negligence, that fire, was a done deal. But in Henry's case, the danger was still there. It was still unfolding.
Exactly. That's the key difference. And that's why the appellate court said that in Henry's case, the chain of causation hadn't been broken.
Okay, so now let's think about this from the perspective of someone studying law. What are the big takeaways here? What should future lawyers keep in mind when they're looking at a case like Henry v. Houston Lighting and Power Co.?
Well, if you're representing a plaintiff, someone who's been injured, this case shows just how important it is to really hammer home those questions of foreseeability.
Right, like we were talking about, it's not about predicting the specific way someone will get hurt. It's about showing that harm was a foreseeable outcome of the defendant's actions.
Exactly. And you also have to stress that the danger created by the defendant was still active when the injury happened.
Okay.
And then if there was another event that contributed to the injury, like the fog machine in this case, you've got to argue that it was a concurring cause, not a superseding cause.
So show that it was part of that ongoing problem rather than a totally separate event that breaks the chain of responsibility.
Precisely.
Okay. What about if you're representing the defendant, the person or company being sued? What should they be thinking about?
For a defendant, the strategy is to try and separate the plaintiff's injury from that initial careless act as much as possible.
Right, like the trial court tried to do with the fog machine argument.
Exactly. You want to argue that the harm that happened was either so unpredictable that nobody could see it coming, or that it was caused by something that happened after the initial negligence was no longer a threat. Like if they had fixed the gas leak and then hours later, Henry tripped and fell, that would be a different story.
Right.
It all comes down to breaking that chain of causation.
Okay. This case definitely gets you thinking.
Yeah. And it brings up some broader questions too.
Oh, absolutely. Like how long does a risk created by negligence stay active? If Henry had been injured, like much later, not right when the fog machine went off, would the outcome have been different?
Yeah. It makes you wonder where we draw that line.
And then there's the question of, could this kind of reasoning make utility companies and other businesses more responsible for injuries, even if they seem kind of far removed from the original negligence.
It definitely raises a lot of questions about just how far responsibility can extend.
Which brings us to that funny but kind of thought-provoking question from our podcast structure. Next time you see a fog machine, think, could that be proximate cause?
Aha, right.
It's funny, but it makes you think about how a seemingly random event can get tangled up in a big legal mess depending on the circumstances.
Definitely. It highlights the complexity of this whole issue of causation.
Okay, so big picture, what's the key takeaway from our deep dive into Henry v. Houston Lighting and Power Co.?
Well, the main takeaway is that the appellate court, they reversed the trial court's decision.
Right.
And they emphasized that because the gas leak was still ongoing and because some kind of injury during the emergency response was foreseeable, they thought HLMP might still be responsible.
Okay.
So the trial court was too quick to let HLMP off the hook just because of that fog machine incident.
It really shows you how tricky these concepts of proximate cause and the firefighter's rule can be.
Oh, for sure. There's so much nuance to it, and so much depends on the specific facts of each case.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it reminds us when we're thinking about negligence, we have to consider the bigger picture.
Yes. Like, what are the responsibilities of companies and individuals who create dangerous situations? It's not just about the immediate harm. It's about thinking through those potential consequences that might happen as others try to deal with those dangers.
Well, thank you for breaking all that down for us. It's definitely a case that makes you stop and think.
Mm-hmm.
And for all of you listening, keep this case in mind. Think about how these ideas of negligence, foreseeability, and causation might play out in other situations, because you never know what kind of legal puzzles you'll encounter in your studies or in your future practice.
You got it.
Until next time.